It's to the best of our knowledge. I'm Anne Strainchamps. This time last year, women in Afghanistan could do a lot of things. Teach, practice medicine or law, direct films, perform in public, even star on TV.
In the past 20 years, one of the things that's been booming in Afghanistan is television. One of the most popular TV shows is called Afghan Star, and it's similar to American Idol.
سلام شب و روز شما بخیر با کنسرت ویژه دو فینالیست و دوباران برنامه ما خوش آمدید.
This is Humaira Gilzai.
There are performers that come from all over Afghanistan, men and women. Of course, there are judges that critique what they're doing, and then at the end, there's a winner.
خراب کردن یا خوب ساختن
صدیقه جان نازنین اول خوبت بگیم که چه یک لباسای مقبول پوشیدین نام خدای کف بلند بر لباسای شما بر استایل جان بزنید
زهرا الهام است باش باید با هنگ زیبایی تو میتونه تشویقش کنه
There was a Pashtun woman who was singing and she was very very popular she was from Kandahar And when they were interviewing her, she said that she knows that the Taliban vote for her because she dressed very conservatively and she didn't dance while we sang. So I would say Afghan Star has produced a lot of stars since its inception.
But where will those stars be a year from now? Because in Afghanistan, everything is changing. The new government is widely expected to place severe restrictions on girls, women, and musicians.
I would think that there won't be any concerts that people can attend to. Maybe there will be some speakeasy music performances and such. People will probably go in hiding. I know through other musician friends that people were breaking their instruments, like their beautiful, cherished instruments, and burning them so they wouldn't be caught with it. It's very, very sad. It's kind of like the Gestapo coming. Everybody's expecting them to come eventually.
Humaira Gilzai was born and raised in Afghanistan. Her family fled during the Russian invasion in 1979. Today, she's a cultural ambassador and co-founder of the nonprofit Afghan Friends Network, which, among other things, runs two schools for girls in the Ghazni province. When Charles Monroe Kane talked with her a few days ago, she said that while it's not clear exactly what kind of cultural restrictions the new Taliban government will put in place, things are not looking good for girls and women.
The schools that we started in a rural province has not been reopened. The teachers have been told to not go to school and open it and teach students. Women have been asked not to go to the teacher training institute. So things are starting to really change, and I think we will see it unfolding in front of us.
You know, you touched on something I wanted to ask about, and that you actually run a school in Ghazni province through your organization, Afghan Friends Network. And you told me that the woman who is the director, she's gone. She feared for her life. She ran that school since 2006, and now, boom, she has to leave the country. Is it that serious?
Well, in her case, she was not only the director of the school, but she was a very vocal advocate of women's rights. She also advocated for women to take a role in the elections. She was voted as a representative to go into the lawyer jirga in Kabul and represent the women from her area. when they were writing the Constitution, which was in 2003. So she's been a known commodity, and she has been receiving night letters and threats from the Taliban for a long time. So her husband and she decided that now is the time that she should leave, because they just felt that the Taliban were soon going to be encroaching into people's homes and finding people who had been advocates and known for promoting things that weren't necessarily in line with the Taliban. Her husband and children have been left behind in Kabul, and we're hoping that we can help them get out.
I want to read something to you. This was Suhail Shaheen. He's the spokesperson for the Taliban. He was speaking to NPR's Steve Inskeep, and this is on the 18th of August. And Steve Inskeep had asked him, and you brought this up, if women who were elected, were they allowed to stay? This is what the spokesperson for the Taliban said on the 18th of August, and I quote, "Yes, women, the women, they have a right to education and to work, and they can hold different positions and jobs right now. The doctors who have started serving, the teachers who have started teaching, also other fields, the women, they are working. The journalist women, they have started working by observing hijab. So yes, women can do their job only if they observe hijab." That seems like he's like, yeah, everything's fine. What do you think of that kind of quote?
Well, when you're talking about the Taliban, we Afghans are always saying, who are you talking about?
Who are you talking about?
Yeah. So there's the Afghan Taliban, which even today, this morning, my colleague who I was talking to was saying, they're kinder, gentler people, and they care about the Afghan people. Then there's the Pakistani Taliban, who is very influential in Afghanistan, and there's a large percentage of them that are within this fighting force. And they're basically representing the mission of ISI, the intelligence service of Pakistan, and not the peace for Afghanistan. And then there's a third set of Taliban who are currently with this group that has taken over, which is Chechens, Somalis, a lot of people from other countries that are there. And we on the outside really don't even know what their motivation is, other than bringing some kind of Wahhabi, very conservative type of Islam. So the people that you are seeing as representing the Taliban, I always encourage people to say, who are they? Who's doing the fighting? Who's mandating these rules? How is Pakistan affecting all of this? It's a very complicated situation, which is really hard to decipher right away. I think it's going to take some time to really see people's real intentions and motives.
That sounds terrible to me. You don't know who your rulers really are. You don't know, quote unquote, who the enemy is. You certainly don't know what's going to change, what's not going to change. You can even be punished for something. You don't even know what the rules are. That kind of anarchy and chaos is just stressful. And I wonder, like, what's the outlet then? If you're a musician, if you're an artist and you're a woman, what is it that you do? Or you just don't do anything, see what happens?
Well, it's debilitating. It really is. I mean, some of my colleagues are having anxiety attacks. They are homebound, completely unsure of, you know, which family member might get hurt and just crossfire, or if somebody's going to attack them, if their neighbor is going to report them for something. I have to say, very prominent directors, female film directors, such as Roya Sadat, Sara Karimi, and Shahbanu, they all got out of Afghanistan. They are prominent advocates for women and beautiful work, and they're not able to continue their work in Afghanistan. I think a lot of people have gone underground, but I can tell you that the amount of anxiety and frustration and sadness and shame I have been feeling here in San Francisco, theirs is at least 1,000-fold more. Maybe not the shame part, because as an American, I'm very ashamed of what has happened to the Afghan people. But the fear, because my family escaped Afghanistan
when the Russians invaded. And, you know, we still carry that in our body. We carry that trauma.
Mm. The school you ran, it's closed, right? Now.
Yeah. And Charles, I feel so sad for our students. I mean, these girls worked so hard. They would come to school early in the morning. They would stay late. They would offer to help in the school to, you know, upkeep. The parents would come. The fathers would fix the roof. And when the Taliban came in the province to take over, I mean, they were fighting on the roofs of our school. All the windows have been shattered. There are bullet pockmarks on all the walls. All the posters we had of poets and scientists and such have been ripped and torn apart. My heart really breaks for these girls who really thought education, and even boys were working hard too, that education was going to be their way to, you know, a better life, to improve their communities and such. And that is all at this point in great jeopardy and possibly not going to happen.
I'm sorry. I just want to say that at this moment.
Thank you.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I think what's important as you're talking to realize for me is that you were a refugee. You were a refugee. You came to America via Germany and Pakistan for years in refugee camps, and you end up in America. There are a lot of Afghan families who are on the same journey you were on. What advice would you give to them?
Well, I came here as a child, so my parents experienced what the adults of these refugees are going to face. And I want to tell them to hang in there, because the first years are going to be hard. They have to learn the language. I know some of them are translators, but the wives may not speak English. Their children may not speak English. If their parents came with them, they may not speak English. So there's the language. There's the whole idea of that you were somebody in your previous country and you're nobody here. You have to start completely from scratch. Everything you have done and built is erased overnight. And here you are with what is the knowledge in your head and what you have in your suitcases. So I would say, but don't lose your pride. Don't lose your dignity. Don't lose hope. Because I think if you have that integrity and that hope that you are somebody, that even on those days where you walk into a grocery store and you have $10 in your pocket and you have to buy food for your family, which is what my parents had to do, ration our food, electricity and such, you still bring that humanity with you from Afghanistan. And that should not be forgotten. And that even though they have lost everything, that they're not devalued as a person. And I think that is something that a lot of immigrants struggle with.
I have one last question for you, and because I've been thinking about her a lot. So the woman who ran your school.
Yeah.
You guys talk all the time. You said, like, what would be the decision to go back?
To Afghanistan?
Yeah. Like, when will she go back?
She's not going back. No. She is at Afghan Friends Network. We're trying to raise money to help her bring her family out. They will probably be in Turkey for a while. And we are working with her to either get asylum for her in Canada or the United States. Because what she has decided, despite the fact that she was a prominent figure and her husband is a doctor, that they will have to sacrifice their careers and such in order to have a future for their kids. And that is the decision that my parents also made, is to sacrifice everything they had worked for and left their home and everything in Afghanistan in order to make a better life. And I so deeply respect her for this, but I so deeply fear for her, because I know what compromises my parents made when they came here and started a life again. So she has a long road ahead of her.
Humaira Gilzai speaking with Charles Monroe Kane. She's the co-founder of the nonprofit Afghan Friends Network. The last we heard about that endangered school director, the U.S. State Department has not responded in any way to her application for refugee status. And as for her husband and children, they can't leave Afghanistan without visas, and the foreign embassies are still closed. Humaira is looking for ways to help.